Thank you. So I'm from Montana State University, and I actually this year I'm not working on approximation methods. I'm working on data analysis with Lisa, but I'm still working on that kind of project with my former advisor in France. So the outline of the talk is the following. I'm going to talk about some general features on the first part of approximation methods, and I also describe the various methods found in the literature. And in the second part, I will focus on post-Newtonian and post-Minkowskian expansion, and I'll show you how we can get radiation reaction from those two expansions. And in the third part, I will discuss the current hot subject in the field, which is the computation of the phase of the in-spiral of a binary system at the third post-Newtonian order, which is an expansion in 1 over C6. So we know that the most promising source of gravitational wave that we'll be detecting with ground-based detectors and space detectors are binary systems. And so if you want to get some good information and, for instance, get some template to extract the gravitational signal from the noisy raw data that the detectors will record, you need a really accurate template. And a template is roughly a function of some parameters that gives you the shape of the waveform you want to extract by match filtering or least mean square methods, things like that. So you need really accurate approximation method, really accurate results, and you can't solve the full general relativistic equation analytically. So basically, what you do is you look for dimensionless and small parameters, and for in the case of a binary system, you have B1 and B2 are the characteristic size of the two stars. M1 and M2 are the mass, which would be the Schwarzschild mass if they were isolated. You have the speed of the center of mass of each stars, and W2 and W1 are the internal speed of the stars. And so what we want to do is to know the equation of motion of the external problem. That means we want to know the equation of motion of those of the speed of the equation of motion of the center of mass of the two stars. So you have some, you can make some geometric dimensionless parameter, for instance, the size of the star divided by their separation, or the eccentricity. Also, there are some methods that are based on the expansion with the eccentricity. You can have the ratio of the center of mass speed and the speed of light, and the internal speed versus the speed of light. And if those parameters are small, that tells you that you're in the slow motion regime. You can also make some dimensionless parameter with the mass and the separation distance, or the mass and the characteristic size of the stars, and that tells you the strength of the gravitational field you're dealing with. And so basically, the post-Newtonian methods and post-Minkowskian methods and many methods take into account the fact that during the in-spiral, well before merger, the speed of the two stars is slow compared to the speed of light, and you are also in the weak field regime when the two stars are well separated. And then the various approximations collapse when those parameters get bigger. So what is a good analytical scheme of approximation? You need your approximation scheme to be amenable to all orders. Otherwise, it casts a real doubt on the approximation scheme. If you have, for instance, at a given order, a term that blows up, what could you think about your approximation methods? You'd like also your approximation method to be convergent, and you want it to converge to the exact solution, but that is the kind of question you can't answer because you need to compare with the exact solution or have another method, but it's really difficult to answer that kind of question. So it can converge also to another solution, it can diverge, and it can go to the exact solution asymptotically. That means it can get closer to the exact solution with higher order of approximation, and then after a given order of approximation, there might be a divergent behavior after that. And you want also your approximation to converge as fast as possible, because if it's not a quick convergence, you will need a really high order to get enough accuracy, and that represents a lot of calculation, as I'll show you in the next slides. So even if your method is not that fast, you can always accelerate the convergence. There are some really well-known method, and especially the Padé approximant. But the thing is, when you use that kind of accelerating method, it doesn't tell you if it converges to the exact solution or to another solution. So you're stuck with that. So what are the difficulties of approximation scheme in general relativity? Of course, you have the non-linearity that is a big problem, especially when you model the two stars as point, if you say that your stars are point-like, because you're dealing with distribution, with Dirac distribution, and then when you have non-linearities, you need to multiply those distribution, and it's not really well-defined, so you need some regularization methods and things like that, so it's quite difficult like this. The general relativity is non-local, so you need to deal with the entire history. Well, in general, you need to deal with the entire history of the source, and so that may cause some difficulties. You also have, if you want, for instance, describe the stars as fluid balls, means they are not point anymore, and you need to describe the internal behavior of the two stars, and to do so, you may want to take a different coordinate system than the one you use for the motion of the center of mass. But if you take different coordinate system, you can have apparent deformation of the star due to Lorentz contraction. If you have a spherical fluid isolated, when the two stars rotate around each other, you have deformation due to the Lorentz force, so they are not due to the Lorentz contraction, so they are not spherical anymore, and you have also deformation due to the Einstein term, redshift actually. So you need then to match the different coordinate system between together, and it's quite mess, as I will show you in the last part. And then you have the boundary conditions, and the boundary conditions are outgoing gravitational wave, and you need to have the true light cone at infinity. And the problem is, you need to solve the ds square equals zero, but with the true metric and not the Minkowskian metric at infinity. So you need to calculate the boundary conditions order by order to get the true light cone and not the Minkowskian light cone. And also, for instance, I describe here the three plus Newtonian energy of a binary system, you recognize here the mass term, and here the kinetic energy, the gravitational potential. So you have, at Newtonian order, you have three terms. At the first post-Newtonian order, you have 8 terms. At the second post-Newtonian order, you have 32 terms. And then at the third post-Newtonian order, you have 130 terms once it is simplified. So it's really difficult to deal with that kind of expansion. And we need, of course, to use some mathematical tool like Mathematica to make the calculation, because otherwise it would take 100 years for a normal human being good in calculation to perform all the calculation. So you have many analytic approximation schemes. Well, the two first basic are the test particle approximation that you use for to describe the detector, and you assume that the mirror are point particle, a test particle, and also to calculate the orbit of a planet around a star or something. When you calculate the orbit of a small mass body around a huge mass body. You also have the linearized gravity that enables you to understand the structure of gravitational wave in the far zone in the vacuum, and that's the basis of the TT gauge. So when you have here I plot the history of a binary system. You have the inspiral phase, the merger phase, and the ring down. And you have many analytical schemes that you can use in all those different parts of the history of the binary system. So let's start with the ring down, for instance. At the end of the ring down, you know that you have a Kerr metric. Actually, so before the end, well, before time equal infinity, you can say that this signal is given by the perturbation of the Kerr metric, and then you can have analytical result for this waveform during the ring down. So for the merger, there aren't so many analytical methods, since it's the worst part where you have all the complexity. Well, of course, numerical relativists can deal with this part, but there are, for instance, there is one analytical method which is called the one-body approach, and it is based on a really strong hypothesis, which tells that the metric in this phase is actually a deformed Schwarzschild metric or Kerr metric, and so this you parametrize this deformation with as many parameters as you want, and what you do is, so you have an exact solution, but you parametrize it with various parameters, and then you expand it in this zone where you have the post-Newtonian calculation, and then you can determine the various parameters of your deformation by matching the post-Newtonian expansion to a given order, 3PN order, and your deformed metric here. But it's based on this hypothesis that we don't know if it's true or not. And for the inspiral, you have post-Newtonian expansion, so it's an expansion in 1 over C. You have post-Minkowskian expansion, the expansion of power of the Newton's constant. And you have also what is called the post-test expansion, which is adapted to strong field, because, for instance, post-Newtonian expansion, if we are rigorous, is not valid for a compact object, since the ratio of the mass and the size of the object is near to one. Well, it's roughly 0.2 or 0.3 for a neutron star. So, well, the approximation is not that good. But it occurs that when you compare those two expansion, they give the same answer. So now, in the second part, I'm going to talk about post-Newtonian and post-Minkowskian expansion. So the post-Newtonian expansion, as I told you, is an expansion of in 1 over c. So h is the deviation of the metric to the Minkowskian metric. So you have this development. For the post-Minkowskian expansion, you have this development. And those two expansions are valid in different, really different domains. Here, in black, it's the exact solution, if we knew the exact solution. The blue one is the post-Minkowskian approximation. So the post-Minkowskian approximation is valid in the far zone, but it breaks down when you get close to the source. The post-Newtonian expansion is valid in the source and near the source, but it blows up when you go far away from the source. And if the speed involved in the source are sufficiently slow, the validity domain of the post-Newtonian expansion and of the post-Minkowskian expansion overlap, and that enables you to perform a matching and then relate the boundary conditions that you don't have access with post-Newtonian expansion with the source that you don't have access with the post-Minkowskian expansion. And this matching gives you the reaction force, as I'm going to show you. So the question that was asked at the beginning of this work was, is the post-Newtonian expansion valid to all orders? And this question arises from an early work from Chandrasekhar, which calculated the two post-Newtonian equations of hydrodynamic in general relativity. And at this order, it arises some divergent integrals. So Kerlik solved the problem up to 2.5 pn, but there is still a problem at 3 pn. And we wanted to be sure that there wasn't any problem at higher order. So we tried to demonstrate that it is valid to all order. And that's, of course, why we wanted to be sure, because if it blows up, you can't trust your template in a sense. So, well, we define H as the deviation of the metric to the post-Minkowskian metric. When you plug that in the general relativity equation and you assume the harmonic gauge condition, you get the D'Alembertian equation with a source term that is given by this kind of development. You have a source term due to the matter, and a source term due to the gravitation itself. And this lambda mu nu contains all the non-linearities. It's a term of, it's a sum of product of H. So this term is the problem. So we made some physical hypothesis, reasonable. So we suppose that the gravitational source is spatially compact, and it's C-infinite, so it's not point-like. It's stationary in the past, asymptotically Minkowski. And here, I just show you that the post-Newtonian expansion is valid if you have this hierarchy for a given physical function. You need to have that. So you have the characteristic period of the evolution of the system, which must be much less than the size, which must be much less than the the inverse of the distance to which you are making your post-Newtonian expansion. So that means you must the post-Newtonian expansion is valid if you are well inside one wavelength radius from the source, and if you assume the slow motion, the wavelength is big enough so that the source is inside the near zone, the post-Newtonian expansion, so that you can perform the post-Newtonian expansion even a little bit outside the source, so that you have an overlap between the post-Newtonian and the post-Minkowskian expansion. So here I just wanted to show you from the relaxed Einstein equation, you can split the D'Alembertian operator into the Laplacian operator and the second time derivative, and you have here the source. And if you know the expansion at two order below, you can calculate the expansion at the order n. And to do so, you need to take the inverse of the Laplacian. But the problem is you need to have a generalized inverse Laplacian, because these terms here doesn't behave, is not a compact term, so it doesn't behave well at infinity. So these terms, and that's what happened in the Chandrasekhar paper, is infinite, is meaningless. So you need to find a good inverse Laplacian, a good solution to this equation. And then here you had you add some homogeneous terms, and those coefficients are unknown, and those coefficients are related to the boundary conditions, those unknown terms. And so to determine those terms, we will need to match with the post-Minkowskian expansion, and this is another formulation of the solution. Oh, because we imposed the harmonic gauge condition. That's all. So the generalized Poisson integral is calculated like this. So without this term, this would be the regular Poisson integral. But you need to deal with some source that may behave like a given power of R at infinity, and so we place this term here, and the solution so this term is can be seen as a function of a complex variable B, and you can expand it. It's analytical. You can expand it. And the right solution for the Poisson integral is the finite part. So that means it's the term in B at the power zero in the expansion that you take, and that gives you the good the good solution. And roughly what that means is you take the usual Poisson integral and you put a cutoff and you subtract some divergent terms, because when lambda goes to infinity, these terms goes also to infinity. But you subtract those divergent terms, which are homogeneous, so you still have a good solution, but this one is finite. So now you can do the post-Minkowskian expansion. The post-Minkowskian expansion is expansion power of g, and you have to so it's valid outside the source. So the equation you have to solve is only this one. You don't have the matter term here, since we are outside the source, and we impose the harmonic gauge conditions. And so the solution you get to a given order in the post-Newtonian, in the post-Minkowskian approximation, is the inverse D'Alembertian of this source plus the most general harmonic term you can find. And the most general term, harmonic term you can find is something like that, where those function f mu nu are undetermined and they are related to the source, which can be reached only with the post-Minkowskian approximation, since the post-Minkowskian approximation blows up near the source. So now we have the general structure of both approximation, and you can make the matching. The problem is those two approximations doesn't have the same mathematical structure. So to perform the matching, you need to get the same mathematical structure. So what you do is you expand the post-Newtonian expansion towards r equals zero, and then you get this green curve by doing this expansion, because you break the regularity of the function in this zone. And you do the same thing for the post-Minkowskian approximation. For the post-Minkowskian approximation, you make an expansion to infinity, and also you break the regularity to infinity, and you have exactly the same structure. So then now you can make the matching of the two expansions, and well, you find that you have some terms that are really similar, and here you have the spatial dependencies of the two approximation, but you know that enables you to determine the homogeneous term coming from the post-Newtonian expansion with those terms that we know exactly from the post-Minkowskian approximation. And from the post-Minkowskian approximation, we didn't know this function, but we can relate this function with the source that we know exactly. And then the problem is solved like this. And doing so you have you've determined the post-Newtonian expansion and those AL in terms of the source and the structure at infinity. And by making a gauge transform, you find the reaction force due to gravitational waves. The first, the quadruple term. And you also find the tail term, which depends on the history of the source because of this contribution. So that was the post-Newtonian and post-Minkowskian expansion. And so now what I just want to talk to you a little bit is the dynamic of binary system up to the third post-Newtonian order. Blanchet and Phi, who was one of his former students, calculated this dynamic up to the third post-Newtonian order, but at the third post-Newtonian order for the energy, they find a really complex expression. But in this expression, there is a term that depends on an undetermined constant that either their team and Damour, Schaeffer, and Jaranowski team couldn't determine. So it was a big problem for a time. And then this team used a different regularization methods, and they finally get the answer, well, this constant is related to this one by linear transformation. So we can determine this constant knowing this constant. And so it's a big problem, since we know that the nature doesn't depend on regularization methods. So we need to know what is the good answer. So what we did is we tried to perform the post-Newtonian expansion with fluid ball instead of point particle. And so there is a theorem that tells that the external problem, that means the motion of center of mass of the two stars shouldn't depend on the internal structure at least up to the fifth PN order, so 1 over C10. And so we took the internal structure into account, and we want to see that at 3 PN this internal structure doesn't appear. So we first use only a profile of density for the stars, a infinite profile density for the stars, and we didn't take into account pressure, internal velocity, and things like that. Since we have an answer with point-like, we guessed that we could have an answer with only a profile of density. So that's what we did. So we get at Newtonian order the right answer, at post-Newtonian order the right answer also. At the second post-Newtonian answer, it's the same answer. And at the third post-Newtonian answer, you have the same answer for the beginning. And at the end, you have some constant here that does depend on the internal structure, that kind of integral, the size, the profile of density. So those terms depend on the internal structure. And the problem is there is no way to get rid of those coefficient or to make them constant, even by a gauge transformation, it's not possible. So we need to take into account all the complexity. So that means you need to take into account the pressure, the internal energy, and the internal velocity also, and the fact that, as I told you before, when you have a spherical body, isolated body, when they are rotating around each other because of their speed and their vicinity, there are some deformation in the coordinate grid due to the Lorentz contraction and due to the redshift, and also due to some tide effect. And so when we take all that into account, we, for instance, at the Newtonian order for the energy, you find the regular solution plus some term depending on the internal structure. But here what you can do is renormalize the mass and put all those terms, since they are constant, the mass, this is the baryonic mass, doesn't vary, the size of the star doesn't vary, the profile doesn't vary. So all those terms are constant, and you can renormalize them in the mass, and then you have the right answer. But to show you the difficulty, what happens at the first post-Newtonian order? So you have in blue, all those terms are the terms you find with the point particle approximation. And that kind of terms here are constant. They depend on the internal structure, but they are constant, so you could renormalize them in the mass. But the problem is those terms in red, they depend on the internal structure, but they are not constant, since they depend on the separation of the two bodies that could change during the evolution. So, of course, you can renormalize those terms in the mass, but the problem is, if you do so, maybe those terms will remain because you can't renormalize those terms in the mass, since the mass must be constant. But hopefully, when you take into account, eventually, when you take into account the pressure, the internal structure, the internal velocity, and all that, and the deformation also, all those terms cancel when you perform the renormalization. So that means that's a good way to handle things. But it gets worse at the second post-Newtonian order. And I'm not going to talk about the second and third post-Newtonian order, but just what I wanted to show you is, for instance, at the first post-Newtonian order, you have that kind of term that depends on the Newton constant, the mass, the velocity, the speed of light, the separation of the distances, and the size of the fluid ball. And here, those parameters, beta 1, beta 2, 3, 4, are some terms depending only on the internal structure. So those terms appears at first post-Newtonian order and second post-Newtonian order. Now, I told you that you could renormalize the baryonic mass into a true mass, ADM, kind of. And the general structure of this renormalization is the following. This term is dimensionless. It has a dimension of a mass, and this term also, of course. And those terms may depend on the internal structure. So when you plug one of these baryonic mass, once you've renormalized, into one of these terms doesn't appear in point-like expansion, since in point-like expansion you say that the size of the stars tend to zero, so those terms cancel. Okay, but the problem is when you perform the renormalization, you have those terms in 1 over b that that blows up. But when you you perform the renormalization, you can have, for instance, these terms, this 1 over b that goes with this b term, and that gives you a finite term that couldn't exist, that couldn't show up with the point-like approximation. So that tells us that we really need to take into account all that, because some terms may come from the internal structure at the third post-Newtonian order, but it's still in progress, and those are long, really long calculations. So in conclusion, that's all.
Okay, we have a few minutes for questions. Anna?
So, how does your work reconcile with the theorem you refer to, which is by De Moore?
Which is the effacement principle. Well, it doesn't reconcile for the time being. It hasn't been proven. It's not a theorem, actually. It's a conjecture.
But there's an old argument of De Moore's based on that Chastenhody expansion.
Yeah, it's exactly this one.
Right. But, yeah. I mean, but it's a little more than a conjecture. It's not quite a theorem. I mean.
Oh, it's not. It has been proven up to the second post-Newtonian order, that's all. And then the fact that it's not tidal effect doesn't show up till the fifth post-Newtonian order. But with all these non-linearities, you may have some coupling with some other effect due to the internal structure that you don't know. Because tidal effects are just Newtonian effect, but you may have post-Newtonian effect that can give you dependencies in the internal structure. So the work of Damu has been proven till this up to the second post-Newtonian order. But
well, I think we're talking about different work by De Moore. So
which one?
So there's a book called Gravitational Radiation that he has an article in.
Lots of articles.
Yes, that's good. He has one argument based on that Chastenhody expansions where he claims that, you know, it's only an argument, it's not very rigorous, but the claim is that you shouldn't get any effects depending on internal structure up to post 5 order, like you were saying.
Yeah, that's exactly this argument I'm referring to.
Okay.
And that it's only a conjecture, it's not demonstrated.
Okay.
And this conjecture is based on an argument that comes from, it's a Newtonian argument that tells you that, assume you have a spherical ball isolated. When you approach another star, of course you will have some tidal deformation, and those tidal deformation will be quadrupolar. And then the quadrupolar deformation of this star is going to induce some tidal effect on the other star. And this force, due to the quadrupolar deformation, is of the fifth order.
Right.
That's all, but it's not a proof, and it's you may have some some post-Newtonian effect with this deformation that may cause some dependencies in the internal structure.
Okay.
Well, everything seems to show that it happens at the third post-Newtonian order, but there may be a miraculous cancellation at the third post-Newtonian order, third post-Newtonian order that could.
Jeff? Zeroth order, which at the zeroth order would satisfy Einstein's equation so that the Einstein tensor would vanish.
Uh-huh.
Have you looked in the way of trying to find some norm of the Einstein tensor and seeing how bad it gets mm-hmm. at each successive stage of approximation?
Yeah, there are some papers about that. It's, well, you're talking about the convergence of the post-Newtonian.
Yeah, in terms of the Einstein tensor, how does it grow with order of?
Oh, you mean how the Einstein tensor goes to zero?
Well, it's zero to begin with at the zeroth order, right?
Yeah, of course.
And then I assume at every other order, it's non-zero.
Yeah.
Or otherwise, you wouldn't be doing an approximation.
Yeah, of course.
So the question is, how fast does it go away from zero? If I look at the first,
well,
second, and third
but
order.
Well, roughly, it's for instance, the if your star is moving at with a speed given by V, and your system is gravitationally bound, so V square over C square is roughly the same amplitude than GM over C square.
I understand that theoretically, but
yeah, and so
you can actually calculate this to find some norm and calculate it. Or,
no,
or this is just an assumption of the approximation, really.
Yeah, we did not. Yeah. It's just an assumption. We assume that it goes to zero pretty fast.
Luis,
you mentioned that maybe something one could do is to try to incorporate the effects of pressures and
uh-huh.
well, all they are in the hope to see if that where they those cancel. But given the huge number of possibilities you have just by considering a different equations of state, wouldn't you think that that's not a good way to go?
The thing we did, it's the problem is to deal with the tidal effect, because for the equation of motion, conservation of mass, and conservation of energy to be exact, well, at the given order, you need to take into account tidal effect. But that, we know the tidal effect doesn't show up at the fifth up to the fifth post-Newtonian order. So we didn't take into account the tidal effect. But so, for instance, at the Newtonian order, we take into account a density profile, and then we calculate the profile of pressure by hydrodynamical equilibrium, so at first order. And then at the next order, we took into account all the terms showing up from the equation of motion in general relativity that are different from the Newtonian one, of course. And so the profile is given by a function that you can adapt as you want. It's a infinite function, but there are lots of them. So what we wanted to get at the end is a result that does not depend on this profile function. And if it depends, it means that the conjecture of Damour is not right, and we have to take into account the internal structure at the third post-Newtonian order. What is really important for LIGO and Virgo, since we need the 3PN template. Well, could be good if we had the 3PN template for the phase to extract the signal.
All right, I think we should move on. Let's thank Olivier again.
Yeah.